We were just talking about how I feel like my time just evaporates. And it really does. Like, I also was just thinking how weird it is that we're already recording this week. Like, the week has gone by. But we're also recording a day early. So day I guess early, that's yeah. not a... Yeah. Not a
I'm leaving early. Tonight, so tomorrow morning I'd be driving. I'm going to be driving to Mississippi. Mm. So 20 hours on the map, which means it's like 26
hours.
Oof. Yeah.
That's a lot. You know what that means? That means 20 hours alone in the car. There are like stretches for like hours where I don't even turn on the radio. I just sit with my own thoughts. I know sometimes it's scary, but I've been practicing it more and more. No radio, no nothing. I don't have XM in my truck. I never even turned it on. So I'm always fiddling with YouTube or podcast or the iTunes.
I think as I get older, I spend a little bit more time in the car with nothing on. It is nice to have just the quiet sometimes.
Yeah, when you're 58, you could do it for like 4 hours at a time.
Something I look forward to.
Yeah. And then when the phone rings, it like breaks the silence. And
you're like, no!
Leave me alone.
Well, it is a truck. You could just put your phone in the bed of the truck and get it when you get there.
Yeah, that's true. Mm.
So what are you doing in Mississippi?
I'm going to meet my buddy Clark. He's Windy Hill Foundry online. I just tagged him in my latest post where it looks like a sewer cap. Clark is hosting an event with, he said it'll be about 30 people there. Keith Rucker will be there. If you guys know Keith Rucker, he restores antique machines in Georgia, and everyone's going to bring something to cast. So that's why I made a couple of examples this week playing with some of my new CNC machines that I'll talk about. And I made some forms. And those forms will go into the oily sand and pull them out. And I'm also going to play with, you guys saw a couple weeks ago, I did this thing called Steel Apple Awards. And I don't know if I talked about it on this podcast where people got cranky because they felt it was clickbait because it wasn't, steel apples. Yeah. They were pewter apples. And so while I'm down there, I'm going to experiment with making steel apples because we're going to be pouring steel. And everything's higher stakes, much, much higher temperature, of course, whereas the pewter is like somewhere in the 400 degree range. This is in 21 to 2300 range for steel. And Clark has a furnace that holds 400 pounds of melted metal. It's going to be interesting to see all this unfold. Yeah.
So I just thought about something. And you mentioned this last week that you were going to make steel apples, but I was still picturing them as like the pewter apples, you know, like the metal-y on the outside. But if you let the steel apples rust, they'll actually look a little bit like apples.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You should let the outside surface rust and have some texture to it and everything. Yeah. Kind of reddish, you know?
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'm going to stop on the way down and grab a bag of apples and use them as the forms and see how that goes.
Make the leaves out of brass and then let that get a little green patina on there.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Huh. Crazy.
Nice. So I'll be playing with all that stuff. Clark has been holding this event every year since 2019, and I keep blowing it off because one thing or another keeps coming up. I had the best excuse because I was like, hey, we're going to start a Netflix show. And he's like, yeah, sure. Okay. and he has a real selling. He's like, oh, the rest, I'm not going to ask you no more. You just keep coming up with excuses. But no, I'm excited to go. Finally, everything worked in the... Everything aligns for me to go. So I'm just jamming, trying to get a couple things done this weekend. I've been putting together a new CNC machine for Carbide 3D, aka Shapeoko. I put the 2x4 together. And then in a couple of days, I'm going to also get maybe today, I'm supposed to get a phone call at one point. I might be getting the delivery of my machine. I got to make sure I keep an eye on my phone. I'm going to be getting a delivery of my plasma cutter. I'm getting the new 4x8 plasma cutter.
The big one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be fun. Okay. So I didn't get any phone calls today. a lot of times I keep my phone on silence. I go and I harvest my messages. That's another trick. I'll leave it on unapproachable except for two or three people. And then I'll go and harvest all the messages and missed calls.
It's not called unapproachable.
What is it? what
is it called? Do not disturb.
Yeah, focus. Yeah.
Is unapproachable. It unapproachable?
That's my setting. I made that. I'm trying to sell an app called Unapproachable. It's an on-off like button. So my CNC machine plasma cutter might come. And then I got the new Harvey bandsaw I've been playing with. So I got a lot of new tools. And somebody asked me, they said, did you just get a whole new slew of advertisers? Not exactly. It's just kicking up the energy for 2025. That's all. Not really.
Cool. Well, yeah. David, what about you? What have you been doing?
We are filming I still need more time with the Casio keyboard. I gotta make it really clear, mostly to myself, that even though this might take many weeks, it's not a many weeks project. It's just a project that I want to do. Okay. And I know myself, and I let the anticipation and the importance of the project build the longer it takes. And so I got to tell myself, just because it's going to take a long time doesn't mean that it needs to be this grand, huge thing. Just make what you want to make. So I'm telling the listeners that, but I'm also telling myself it's okay if this takes a little bit longer. So we are, we started a couple weeks ago. We went book shopping. I collect woodworking books and maker book and books and art books. And so a couple weeks ago, we filmed me going to thrift stores and antique stores and used bookstores to show how I get books. And then today we're filming all the inside stuff here in my office. We don't normally film in the office, but I want to talk about why books are important to me, especially older books, and how I use them for inspiration and motivation and learning. And so that's what we're working on.
Cool. I want to we've talked about this before, but I want to remind you about Parkinson's Law. Do you remember Parkinson's Law?
You've told me, but I forget everything.
Okay. That's what the law is, that David forgets everything.
Yeah.
And I don't know how Parkinson knew that, but that's what the law. No. His law is work expands so that it fills the time available for its completion.
Yeah. That's right.
So the more space you give it, the more space it's going to take.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing and a bad thing. Like, you can look at that as a negative or a positive, really. I've always looked at it at kind of a negative. Like,
right.
You know, it takes longer than it should because you give it the opportunity to take longer than it should. But at the same time, if you try to force something to be small, it will be small. If you allow it to be big, it can be big, good, better. You know, you could look right at it from that perspective too. So
there's some unknowns here that always slow down a project. So if I'm just working on a woodworking project and I'm building a cabinet or a table or a desk, I can somewhat predict how long it's going to take. And at least I know exactly how to do all the steps. Like, oh, I'm going to use this joinery. I already know how to do that. But with this, there are some unknowns. Like, I haven't quite figured out how big the cavity inside this toy keyboard needs for all the electronics that I'm going to add. And then I think it's going to take me a couple of iterations of placement of things, which might mean if I don't like the placement my first go around, I have to unsolder and resolder things. And I'm not real confident within my abilities with all that stuff. So I approach those things a little bit slower. So it's just the unknown slows me down.
Can I make a suggestion to help Please. With that? So make some connectors when you're doing the soldering, specifically between the different units. Mm-hmm. Make them connectors. So if you need to move them further from each other, you can then just make a cable that can connect in.
So I got for this project, I got a bunch of little plastic clips, and they have like two little, it's so you can easily connect two wires to each other.
Yeah. Yep.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, those are also great fidget toys. I've been sitting here at my desk and just flipping up the little connector. Yeah. So I got some of those. I also, with the little tube preamp, I made a little temporary box for it and soldered on some quarter-inch jacks. So I can... tube preamp has two channels. It's made for left and right, but you can rewire it so you can have one channel go into the other channel to drive it. And then you can add like a potentiometer in the middle there. You can add one before. So how much you're driving each one of the tubes. Huh. And at first I was like soldering and doing all this stuff. And I'm like, this is taking way too long. So I just added a bunch of quarter inch jacks everywhere in a little box so I could quickly test. Do I want to use two channels? Do I want to use one? Do I want to add a potentiometer between here? Is it necessary? So there's a lot of tinkering that I'm doing off camera that I will go into detail on camera once I figure out what I want.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I also think I ruined one of the two preamplifiers. It's much quieter than it used to be. So I just ordered, they were $20. So I just ordered another one. My brother buys storage lockers when people abandon their storage lockers, and then he sells this stuff on eBay. And he came across this lot of tubes, vacuum tubes.
Oh, really?
Just like a huge amount, like more than what you would ever want to find, especially as somebody, like, he's like, do I sell them individually? Do I sell them all as a big lot? And they're all in the old little individually packaged, so they're all brand new. And he found a couple that will work with this preamplifier that I'm using, and I'm gonna of course swap out the tubes just to see if there's a difference or if it looks cooler sonically. I'm not gonna be able to hear the difference. I don't have that kind of ear, but yeah. Guitar amplifier people will swap out 6L6s or whatever for something else, or this Russian tube because it has a warmer sound. I don't hear any of that stuff.
What in the world does a tube do? When we were kids, my grandfather had a wooden box, and in the wooden box was all the tubes with the packaging. My dad's father used to fix TVs for the neighborhood.
So please don't make me answer this on the show.
I can read you a Wikipedia page if you want me to.
We would joke around and say that they were light bulbs. They were like crazy light bulbs.
Yeah. So they are basically light bulbs. So there's a, I can't answer that. I really don't know. But when you buy a guitar amplifier, you got basically two choices. You have a solid state or you have a vacuum tube. And there are people who prefer one to the other. Solid state is usually a much lighter amplifier. But it has something to do with electricity going in there, and then it kind of maybe storing that electricity for a brief second so it can build up the power.
Yeah, they amplify. That's really all I know about it, is that they amplify a signal. And so, it, you know, like if you had small tubes in a guitar amp, you have a certain level of amplification of any particular signal. So like you could amplify the mids or the lows or the overall volume or the whatever. And then you have bigger tubes, so you get more. I don't know a lot about it, but I know that they're
they amplify. They're not light bulbs. They're not just to see what's going on.
They are
the
also light bulbs, but they're not light bulbs.
It's a tiny little low orange light.
Yeah, I think I'm going to I don't have any of the boards in here. So you can have the tubes on the board, you can have them sticking up or you can have them laying down. So there's two ways to mount the tubes to the board. And I think I'm going to have them sticking up, and then I'm going to have them sticking out of the keyboard because they just look cool and you'll be able to see the little glowing light bulbs on there.
Yeah. Okay, so this is things to know.
Thank
you. A vacuum tube is an electronic device used in many older model radios, TVs, and amplifiers to control electric current flow. So maybe I was wrong. The cathode is heated, as in a light bulb, so it will emit electrons. This is called thermionic emission. So that actually wasn't very helpful, but
too technical for me.
Yeah, yeah. Uses a vacuum. Okay, wait. This is better. A vacuum tube is an electronic device that uses a vacuum as an insulator to shield against electric currents. It works in... And then it gets confusing. Never mind. They're light bulbs. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'm looking forward to seeing that whole keyboard thing.
Thank you. Keep your expectations in check. when I was doing research for this, I then got into this rabbit hole of guitar amplifier makers on YouTube, which it's way beyond what I am capable of, but I just became fascinated with people who can build these. And I don't know if I talked about it on the show, but there was this kid I came across. He's like 20 years old and he's building a guitar amplifier from scratch. Like he's cutting out the aluminum box and then bending the box into a box to hold all the electronics, like getting that detailed in the build. And then when it comes time to do the case for the guitar amplifier, and he doesn't have like a full wood shop. So he's out there on sawhorses cutting wood for the case. And he's like, I'm going to do finger joints. And I came across this video on YouTube. I'll link it down below. It's a great video on making finger joints with a router. And I click down in the description and it was linking to my video. And it this video, it has like 1,000 views. And and I just randomly come across it because I got someone interested in guitar and building for a brief moment. And he mentioned my video, which is really cool.
That is cool. Isn't that an interesting circle though?
Like, yeah.
Two different expertise that were both like kind of helping each other do or think about the same thing, which is
like chocolate and peanut butter.
Chocolate and peanut butter. That's really cool. Let's see. For me, I finished up. I told you I was making a bed, right? I tell you I was making a new bed.
You're making a bed?
Yeah, I was making a bed. I finished a bed. I made a bed. So I designed a new king size bed for Jenny and I. The one I made before was like 10 years ago, and the style of it was, you know, kind of outdated and stuff. And I wanted something more mid century. So that's why I was getting all that the walnut plywood. I was having trouble finding the walnut. It was so that I could make this bed, and it turned out really nice. Like I'm proud. It's a very simple, you know, it's a plywood bed build, but I'm really happy with how slick it looks. It's just walnut.
Drawers, it has three big frame.
So it has drawers all around the bottom. There's two set, like a set on each side, and then there's a center drawer that comes out of it that's like 4 feet long. So put all of our wrapping paper, the stuff that's always in the way. We never have a good way to store it. Now we have this like hidden away place to put up all the wrapping paper, and it goes away. We don't have to see it. So a bunch of storage underneath it, and then made a headboard, which we'd never had a headboard before, really, or in this last bed, we hadn't had one. But it's the part that comes up over the mattress. I found some mid-century ones that had like a slanted, the part that comes up leans back just a little bit, and then it has sliding panels, and they're really simple looking, but it was just a nice, I don't know, nice, clean.
It's like a headboard that has a console in it. Like when
it's about 6 inches deep. I mean, it's not big, not very deep, and it's kind of short, so it only goes up to where the pillows will kind of, when they're standing up, will cover it. So you don't really see it unless the pillows aren't there. But Jenny and I had really different ideas of like what we wanted the headboard to look like. She wanted like a flat decorative headboard. I wanted some storage. She didn't want to see anything in the storage, and so we ended up with this like sliding panel. Like it has three panels and they slide across and there's storage behind them. So it's just, when you look at it, it's just walnut. It's just a big, smooth, angled walnut thing. Anyway, I finished that up yesterday and it was one of those, like, I really liked the way it looked, but I wasn't sure if she was really going to be into it, you know? And so I like installed it while she was gone and kind of waited for her to come home and go in. She went in the room, came out and didn't say anything about it. And I'm like, oh no.
No.
And so later on, I'm like, so did you like the bed? And she was like, what bed? Oh, did you put the bed in there? And I'm like, yeah. And apparently she was just distracted and didn't actually see it, but she did really, really like it. So that was cool. But I've been working on that.
Speaking of the headboard. So I made a bed for the rental house last fall and I drew the whole thing up in Fusion 360 and I didn't, within the Fusion 360 model, I didn't include the mattress or any of the pillows or anything. And so I drew this headboard. It's nice and it's nice and simple. And it just was meant to peek out over everything and just add a little bit of the walls are paneled and with like a hickory. And then the walnut headboard would have a nice contrast and give us some interest to the room. And as soon as I put the mattress in and then added pillows, can't see the headboard. I was so disappointed in myself for not building it tall enough. So in that video, I said, I'm actually going to remake this because I was very disappointed, and I'm going to do something. I'm going to turn it into a piece of art. So it's going to be like some sculptural thing, which I haven't come up with yet. I haven't caught that idea.
Right on. Well, we had a kind of a topic today, Jimmy. What was it you said?
Well, I've been playing this week with new software. I've been playing with the Carbide 3D software, trying to make sure that I kind of stay on all their platforms just so I can get the most out of the machine. You could use Vectrex to create 3D CNC patterns for their machine, but I wanted to stay inside their software. So just talking about how we could compare and contrast notes on how you guys approach a brand new software. This week, I'll be also playing with Sheetcam, I've never played with before. And then every new machine has its own personality to run those machines. So for instance, Carbide 3D has motion, which makes the machine go. That's one thing. If you're not a CNC person, there's the design software, and then there's the software that runs the machine. And you have to be proficient in both to get the most out of the machine. If you're going to run a laser, for instance, Lightburn is the type of machine where you can design, is the type of software where you can design and then send to the laser from there. But a lot of other programs, when it comes to the CNC routers, they tend to have two. So you got to be familiar with the design software. Then you also have to be familiar with how to run those cut paths. Once you make them in one software, you bring them into the other, and that's the software that runs the machine.
Yeah, it's like the hardware control software.
It would basically be like the print dialog box for an Epson printer, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you send something to print, that little dialog box pops up and gives you the lightning bolt, which means something's wrong, which I'm used to. That's all. It's always there. and you got to troubleshoot and figure out what's going on there. So the idea of getting familiar with yourself, getting familiarized with those materials, getting yourself used to something new, especially I've been using Vectrex, and I'm not going to go away from Vectrex. In fact, you can use Vectrex and then output or post out your cut paths to the Shapoka, which I'm going to most likely do in time, but I'm just trying to get proficient at everything just so I'm familiar with it. And it's the first time in my entire CNC career, which is 12 years now, that I'm trying something outside of a ShopBot controller, outside of VCarve. And it's interesting in how they're all very similar. You know, if there's something you're used to in VCarve, you know it's there. You just got to dig for it. It might not be as prevalent or at least as obvious on the surface, but you got to dig and you got to look for it. Or in my case, you can call Kevin and just ask him and bug him again for the 50th time that day. But it's interesting to learn something new. And yesterday I was up against a wall with one of the things I was playing with. It was that manhole cover. And I had no idea what I was doing. An hour later, I went back and I played with the software. And boom, all of a sudden I had exactly the answer I want. And it was just a good example of just continuously digging in, not worrying about making mistakes, play with a file. I just drew a star in the very beginning and said, how can I cut the star out? I want to pocket it. I want to cut it out. I want to bevel the edge. I wanted this. And just keep playing with all the cut paths and just experiment without abandon. That's really, is that, I don't know, that's the right phrasing. But you just want to just keep experimenting without fear is really what I'm saying. Just keep experimenting without fear. And then the plasma table is going to come, and that's going to be a whole new set of things to play with, and that's going to be fun. I got my new Hypotherm plasma cutter, because that comes from the USA. The machine itself comes from British Columbia. So just to save me on some, instead of sending it back to Canada and bringing it with the machine, he sent it directly here. So I got my new Hypotherm plasma cutter, and then I assumed the machine. This is another thing. Is that the Shapoka comes disassembled. I had to put the whole thing together. And when I pulled out the wiring harness, and I was just like, you hear the brake screech. I was like, I don't know what to do with this thing. And you have to snap open the whole chain. I bothered Kevin like 50 times about this thing. I was like, I don't see the plug. He's like, if you lift up the thing, it's, I'm like, oh, there it is. Okay. Never mind. I was like, I don't see the plug. He's like, if you open up box 3, I'm like, okay, there they are. So I was being a whiner. But having to snap open the chain.
I've never drag loaded chains.
What are those chains called?
It's called drag chain.
Yeah, I've never loaded a drag chain. In this case, I had to put two coolant wires in the power cord in there. So this is another interesting thing. The plasma table. Now, I don't know when it comes. I know they test drove it because, of course, they sent me video of it working. And it's all wrapped up. And now the plasma cutter is here at my house, but the table's not here yet. I wonder if in the drag chain it has the cutting torch. I opened up the box with the thing, and then there's like an 80-foot cutting torch, which means it has to go into the chain, I'm assuming. Unless it just comes with the one and they left the one that's in there. I don't know.
No, that's probably part of the cutter. Yeah, you're going to have to open the chain to put that in. I remember the drag chains on both of my Avid machines, there's the plasma table and the router. The drag chain and getting all of those cables in there was such a pain. And that's not a problem of theirs. It's just drag chains. They're so just a pain. Snaps.
Was it the kind with the little hinged door or the kind where you actually have to pop off the side?
These have like a hinge, the one top side kind of.
Yeah,
you break or you like separate one side and it flips up. So I guess it's a door.
But the annoying thing is that half of that thing has to go flat down. So you have to unscrew it and lay it all the way out and then snap, 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 snap. And then put it back in and then organize your cables as you go in and hope everything you do will be. I'm like, snap, I hope this is it. Snap, I hope this is everything. Snap, I hope I'm. And now I'm like 8 feet. I hope I don't have to open this again. So
is there anything about that the new machine that you're expecting to be different? I mean, I know the software is a little bit different.
The plasma cutter?
Yeah. But
I expect it to work.
I know you said.
Okay, high expectations.
Things that you have to learn.
Yeah, no, I have to learn SheCam, which is, by all accounts, JD has always told me it's a much better program to use, and he's showed me
over. I have so much problems with SheCam.
Oh, really?
See, I just watched JD play things on, making play cuts on it, but I never touched the mouse. So I'm excited to do that. And then, of course, their printing dialog box for their machine. I got to learn that. Their machine software. I'm excited to learn. What I expect is the reason I got a 4x8 table this time is because when I had the previous table was 4x4. I occasionally would leave pieces on there that were very heavy if I expected to cut some more out of that piece. So you throw up a 2x4 piece of not 3/8 of an inch. And that's very heavy. That's like 100-something pounds. And you don't want to have to pull that off to run a thin sheet. And so, when I visited Christian Sosa's shop in Vegas, he has Sosa Metalworks. He makes custom motorcycles. He had a 4x8 fast cut CNC. And on his table, he had a piece of half inch, piece of eighth inch, a piece of 3/8. So he said when he needed for the project, he would send the cutting head to the different pieces. And I thought it's like, that's cool. I like that. Because if the metal's sitting there and I need a piece, I'll run the machine to that cutter versus being like, I know this piece is stacked on the wall. I'm by myself. I got to move 5 heavy sheets to get to the one sheet I need. If I could leave a piece of 2x4, 3/8 sitting on the machine so I could occasionally go and just harvest a part out of it, for me, that's a better workflow. And that's why I got the 4x8. Not necessarily to throw on a big giant. I have the availability, but for me, it's more about leaving a selection of material available to cut when I need parts.
Well, and putting a giant sheet of, you know, 4x8 sheet of any size steel, you have to have serious.
Do you have a way to move that by yourself? Do you have some sort
of suction cutlet? Not necessarily, but it's just a matter of time before I buy something else that I don't need. No, I have a forklift. Rob really restored this forklift, a small forklift that we were going to use over here at the house, but I've been reluctant to get it going. It's just sitting. It runs and drives. It's old. It's kind of funny because it's so old. But we got it going, changed the bearings and the wheels. Rob did a lot of work. But the only thing I'm reluctant is that it's got these tiny little wheels and I have a gravel driveway. So I know that the minute I drive out of the shop, I'm going to get stuck in the gravel. So I need something with bigger wheels for the back of the house here. I have a proper forklift that cost me $25,000 that I bought reconditioned. It's a great forklift, but I can't, it's so heavy. This one that I'm talking about with Rob is tiny. It's small. It'd be perfect for the backyard. But if you get stuck in the gravel, all of a sudden your wheels spin and then your frame's touching the ground, then forget it. You need another forklift to get your forklift out of the forklift. So I need something with bigger tires. Until then, I just use manpower to put the heavy plates on. I haven't really had to pick up a bigger piece than 2x4. I always buy it 2x4 because I know that at least I can handle that myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, there'd be kind of a unique condition where you would need to cut something out of a single piece that's that big. You know?
Yeah. Unless maybe it's sign work or something.
That way or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, sign work. But then you throw like the. Years ago, I made a Bullet Bourbon sign. It's for their headquarters, for their new, for their new distillery when they rebuilt the new distillery about 10 years ago. And I made, when you walk into one of their tasting rooms, a big Bullet Bourbon sign out of half inch steel. It was my idea. They said, what would you do? I was like, oh, big, thick, rusty letters. And I couldn't cut them out on that machine. The machine was too problematic. I could ultimately if the machine was behaving correctly. So I had it cut out at the Albany Steel facility here. They cut it out for me and they cut it out of one big sheet. They just laid out the letters on a sheet, but they didn't have to be, but I needed some border parts and they cut that all out of a big sheet that I could do now for myself without a problem. And ultimately, well, those were cut out of half inch steel, which I could never have moved a piece of half inch, not even a piece of half inch, maybe 2x4 would be a couple hundred pounds. I would need help.
Yeah, that's heavy.
But the bottom line for me is that I have more and more often I'm having no ceiling when it comes to be able to create certain images and certain things. And that's what I like. I like having no limitations. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, I've got a new thing coming and we've talked about it in the after show a little bit, but I don't think I mentioned it on the main show. And from the perspective of like learning
curve,
a new thing, it's a bunch of new things to learn at the same time. So the X Tool just announced this thing called the Metal Fab, and they're sending me one, and I actually should already have it, but it's been stuck in freight shipping. So I think I get it tomorrow is the plan. But this thing is. It's a laser welder, a laser cutter, like a metal laser cutter, it's a fiber laser, a laser cleaner, and a CNC. So it's a handheld laser welder gun with a little box that's, you know, the welding unit. And then you can mount this and you can use that same gun for cleaning, for welding, and then you can mount the gun in this box, this like 2x2 bed CNC box, and you can do cutting and cleaning, I guess, within the CNC. And so it's a bunch of stuff. They make it sound like the software that you run is like the normal X-Tool kind of creative software for the CNC part of it. And it has a big screen on the thing, like an 8-inch screen. So you can do a lot of the stuff right there. And then they say for the welding and for the cleaning, it has presets for everything. So you really just have to like use the touch screen and say, I'm welding this thickness, this material, go. And then you pull the two triggers and you weld. That's the way they make it sound. And I've watched some videos of people using it and that's how it looks. So I'm pretty excited about
some people at FabTech have played with these type of machines. They're becoming a whole new category of welding and cutting and laser, using a laser. And they said it is really like magic. The way it looks is the way it really works, is what some people have told me.
Yeah.
I used to have the X-Tool P2 laser, excuse me. And X-Tool by far has the best laser software as far as ease and understanding how to use. And so I would have high hopes for the software for this machine. And an 8-inch screen sounds huge. It's like
it does.
Tablet.
Yeah. And I've never had any X-Tool products. And because, I mean, it's like I already have lasers, you know, like CO2 lasers, and I didn't really have any reason. Anytime they've reached out, it's like, well, I don't really need another one, whatever. This thing, I could not pass it up. They told me what all it did, and I'm like, well, I can't say no to that. Because thinking about and this is not supposed to be a commercial for them. I'm just excited about a thing that I haven't gotten to try yet. Thinking about working on the Ghia, one of the big things that has taken me a long time to get just barely okay at, not even remotely good at, is the sheet metal replacement. Is you have to be so precise with your cutting to get pieces to fit back together. You have to be super delicate and precise with your tacking to get pieces back together. And then you have to go really slowly for welding the panels together because the metal is so thin, it warps easily. And they started telling me about the thicknesses or thinnesses that this thing can do and how low the heat was. And it just sounds like a perfect use case for sheet metal for a car for restoration. And so that's the thing that I'm the most excited about. Now, the other side of it is the cleaning for an old car, being able to like laser off rust on parts and not have to go through the process of like manually cleaning and getting in all the
corners. Did you have your car sprayed? Didn't you have it on the rotisserie?
Sandblasted. Yeah.
Yeah. Did that get everything or is there still some stuff?
That got everything on the body because I just had him do the body, but the chassis is still assembled, but it was separate. And so, you know, the entire front end, the entire back end have not been touched and they are covered in grime and covered in rust and everything. And, you know, my plan and probably what I'll still do is to completely disassemble each one of those sections and clean everything, paint everything, start rebuilding those sections. But if I could, if something's working and I don't have to take it apart and I can just clean it with this thing, like, I don't know, that sounds pretty But at the same time, I do want to make sure that I take apart everything that could potentially have a problem that needs to be rebuilt. You know, so I'm, I don't want to use this as a way around doing the work. I just want the work to be faster. So the other cool thing about the CNC part of it is it can, I don't really know. I mean, I don't have any experience with it yet because I don't have it. But the videos that they show, it the CNC has two cameras in it. So it's like the modern, you know, like laser, like CO2 lasers where it can map what's on the bed and then it can cut around them. And this thing will also do vertical travel. So they show an example of cutting some pieces out that are then flipped up and sticking off the surface or the surface is wavy.
Where the piece doesn't fall through, it just kind of catches.
Yeah, but it's still sticking up in the way of the laser head. And this software will allow the laser head to hop over those pieces or waviness in the material, it will follow that. And I don't know, it looks, it could all be smoke and mirrors, but it looks pretty amazing. So, but I'm also, I think the reason I brought it up, I'm excited about it for one, but also there's a complete unknown here with the software. And you were talking about that. There's software that runs on the computer, which I got really scared because I thought they only had Windows software yesterday when I was reading through the documentation. I'm like, oh no, but they do have a Mac version. So there's software that goes on the computer for updating the firmware on all these things. And then there's a tablet on the CNC and those are two, or on the unit, I guess. And those are two different things that serve different purposes, but they're two things I have to learn. And so I'm going into this like a bunch of new hardware, two pieces of software, and I have to almost immediately start using this tool in a project. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit like, and the shipping has been delayed. So I've already lost a week and a half of playtime with the thing. So I'm a little bit anxious about how quickly I'm going to be able to be productive with this new thing.
You know, I've said this before in other concept applications. With this machine that I got the other day, I pulled into my driveway one afternoon and there's these giant boxes, 6 feet, and it says heavy team lift on them. And it's all the parts for the CNC. It was probably two huge boxes, which I had to flip flop into my car. I couldn't pick up. They were too heavy. And then several smaller boxes. And so Saturday morning, I said, my goal today is to unpack everything. That's it. Organize the giant car size pile of cardboard and packing material. That's it. So I got everything on the table, organized, laid out, and I took a lunch break. That was about noon. I was like, okay, I could see obviously with my eyes what goes to what without even opening up the manual. I was like, let me just place those objects near each other. Did that, took me about 20 minutes to place the big parts near each other. And then I open the manual. I was like, oh, okay, this connects to that. Connect to that. And then all of a sudden it's 3 o'clock and I'm 90% assembled. And then I pulled out the wiring harness. It's like time to have lunch. And the wiring harness to the side. But these little goals. And then by Sunday afternoon, I was talking with Kevin. I said, today I'm just going to see if I can air cut. That's it. If I can air cut tomorrow, I'm happy. Because then I had to go buy a plug to run the 220 volt thing. I just didn't happen to have the right extension cord. But these little goals is like, I air cut. Now I familiarize myself that much. Tomorrow, Monday morning, I'm going to cut something. I actually was able to cut Sunday night. But I just kept setting myself these small goals. And when I got there, each time I was like, okay. Walking up to base camp one, base camp two, base camp three, conceptually speaking. Versus being like, oh my God, so much to do. So many bolts.
I enjoy the software part of what we do. I really like to, I just like drawing in the digital world. And so I like the digital tools and all that part. I am going to guess that Bob, you enjoy it or somewhat enjoy it. And I'm going to guess that Jimmy, you don't enjoy that part. Curious to hear your thoughts.
I don't mind doing it. I mean, I really like, as a matter of fact, yesterday, me and Rachel went to a friend's birthday party on Saturday night. And I bumped into this new friend of mine, Lee, and met him through Rachel and her friends. Great guy, artist, real genuine artist, a little bit older than me. And he's been following me since he met me and he's always commenting on my stuff. And I saw Lee at the party the other night and Lee's like, oh, so he's, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to this casting event. I'm going to be casting metal. And he goes, oh, cool. He goes, you're going to make a manhole cover? And in my mind, I'm like, yes, I've been wanting to. I was like, and I said to him, I'm like, dude, you just jogged a memory. It's in my notes. I've been wanting to do it. This is the perfect opportunity to do it. So when I left him, he doesn't even know this yet. I was like, I go, yeah, I want to. I pretended like I was already making it, but I'm going to tell him when I see him. He reminded me that I wanted to make it. And I got home and I screen grabbed a couple images of sewer cap in New York, like the iconic ones that I've been looking at for 100 years. And I brought in an image, laid it on the ghosted the image in Illustrator, and I drew right on top of it. And that was so much fun, just unlocking. So I went from concept screen grab of just a real suit cap drawing. Within an hour, I was cutting it. And just so, yes, I love drawing for that reason. Because I draw in Illustrator, so it's easier. And I was able to save it as SVG and then bring it into any program.
Illustrator is also my home base. It's just the software that I know. And then I bring, like, I could draw in Vectric. I could draw in Fusion 360, but my 2D stuff, I just started in Illustrator because I know I can do it somewhat quickly.
Yeah.
Although I will say one, the spline tool in Fusion 360, I think is better than the Bezier curve tool in Illustrator. It's just,
I haven't played
in a minute. Just going to throw that out there to stir it up.
I've always wanted to be able to use Illustrator-like vector tools to draw. And there's this, there's some disconnect between my, like, I can see things, but getting those tools to do exactly what I want, specifically with curves, with, you're talking about like spline and, you know, make a curve that goes in and then out, then wraps around a thing. I was trying to draw something in Illustrator like 2 days ago and I could not get the profile that I wanted. I just don't know how to move the tools right. So I ended up making individual shapes. And this is the wrong way to do it, the long way around. I know.
That's not so bad. But, I mean, you make shapes and connect them.
Hang on, I'm not done yet. So I ended up making shapes for the color that I wanted. I was making a shape, and I made a rectangle, and then I made white shapes that were the other knockouts, and I laid them over top of the thing to try to build the profile that I wanted, and then did the Pathfinder thing to knock it all out.
That's totally
right
to do it. Well, but it's a waste of time, because I know that if I were using the spline tool, and if I could effectively just like draw the profile and then adjust the little things. So to answer your question, I want to be able to do that, but there's always this, there's like a technical disconnect between me being able to, you know, and using the tool. But at the same time, like even going to art school, like, I don't have a lot of drawing skill. Like, I can't sit down and draw a thing in true representation. But I could sit down and sketch in three dimensions the thing that I want it to look like and get close enough that I could explain it to
somebody. You mean in Fusion?
Well, no, just on paper. Like, okay. I learned the mechanics on paper enough to be able to get the idea across, even though it's not like I wouldn't make art with it. But, you know, I can sketch in three dimensions pretty easily.
When drawing with points and Bezier curves in Illustrator, a common mistake that I do, and that I'm sure a lot of people do, is you add too many points. When you have too many points, sometimes it becomes too complicated to try and match a curve or really mimic a part. Like, the sewer cap was easy because it was all just graphics. So all I had to do was make squares and circles. And then that was easy. But if you're doing a more organic shape, like if you're trying to draw an island, for instance, and you have an aerial view of an island and you want to click around with Bezier clicks to make the silhouette of that island, to do an outside or an inside curve, usually you can get mostly out of 2 points at each beginning and end of that curve. Sometimes you need a third one in the middle, but that's it. I mean, unless it's a real zigzaggy thing, but if it's a sweeping curve that starts and ends, and if you have ins and outs, usually you only need points at either side of the curve. Hardly ever do you really need a Bezier in the middle. Yeah. The Illustrator guys are yelling at their computer right now, because I'm probably using all the wrong words.
I know what you mean. I understand that.
And then I always do a slight representation. Also, always draw with your color off, because you're going to end up blocking. You're trying to trace on top of something, and your color is going to fill in from point to point. Sometimes they're going to be over itself, and then you're going to be blocking what you see. So I do a quick click representation of what I'm trying to do. Then I go in with the white tool, the point selection tool, and I fine tune it.
Is there a way in Illustrator, man, we got really, I don't know. Is there a way in Illustrator to do like a pencil? I want to draw this line and it's jaggedy and it's terrible. And then once you get the line drawn, you can like smooth it.
Yes. Two tools.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me, please.
Two tools. So you can use, I got balloons. I made the peace sign with the two
balloons
tools.
Pop up.
All right. So, Illustrator hack for you.
You're going to be really confused about that, but
yeah. Instead of using your Bezier tool like Jimmy was explaining, use the pencil and kind of freeform draw what you want. Then there is a smooth tool that has a slider, so you can smooth it out. And then there is also a simplified tool that will remove all those extra points.
Got it.
And so, sometimes I will do that, and the smooth tool is fantastic, and it's gotten some improvements over the last couple of years too. And you can then draw when I need something that's symmetrical. I will draw what I want, and then I'll place a box over half of it, and then cut out half of it, and then do like a mirror operation on that to get what I want. But yes, simplify and smooth. Those are that's what you're looking for.
Awesome. That will probably help me quite a bit, because I think that's the thing is, you know, I can rough in the shape, but then like getting that to turn into a vector, nice, smooth thing is just never, that's where it breaks down for me. Cool. Awesome. I learned something new and I'm going to try it.
It's funny that Jimmy mentioned, you know, going from one software to another, knowing all those tools are there, you just don't know what they're called or what it looks like. Just last night, I watched this video about this. It's a music video about he normally uses Ableton Live for his music production, and then he's trying Logic Pro. And the video is called "I Switched to Logic Pro Because I Hate Myself." And so it's somebody who's, you know, really good at one and then just switching to the other to make a humorous video. And it was a great video because it shows all the frustrations that I'm sure Jimmy was having of like, I don't know what this thing is called. I got to search on YouTube how to do this. Yeah. And every piece of software it's called something else. So I'll throw this video in as one of my picks. And Jimmy, you mentioned Sheetcam, and I have Sheetcam for my plasma table, and I hate using it. It's only because I don't know it. And you have to, like, I don't know what there's too many buttons on the screen at one time. And I have to take my mouse and I have to go over a button. Then I have to wait 5 minutes for that little tool help pop up thing to come up so I could. Yeah, it's about 5 minutes. It's on an old PC, so it takes everything takes forever.
It's probably half of a second.
Yeah, it really is, but it feels like forever when you're in the garage and it's cold and you're on this PC that you don't know how to use.
Yeah.
But I don't know what all the icons mean, and it's just a lack of experience.
I never even opened the program, so it's going to be interesting. I've never even cracked it or even looked at a YouTube
video. Oh, yeah. It looks like it was made for Windows 95.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it looks like. I saw it in JD's over his shoulder.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But I went from iMovie to Final Cut Pro this year. I started on Final Cut Pro when Final Cut Pro first started, and that's when it looked like the original Avid, they copied each other. And then iMovie came out, and I started using iMovie when I went to YouTube full time. And finally, I went back to Final Cut Sean's urged me over the years to try and play with Final Cut. But now there are certain things, which I'm totally happy with Final Cut. You guys have always been using Final Cut.
And we've been telling you to use Final Cut for 10 years too.
No, but Sean's always sending me intimate details and examples on screen. And I did do a couple of movies over the years on Final Cut, but I was always afraid that everything would just be too complicated and I wanted to keep things streamlined. But now I've gotten a workflow, which I'm happy with. But every once in a while, there are still things I can't remember. I just go right to YouTube. Like, for instance, Master Volume. Control Option L, Master Volume to lower, because if you're doing a voiceover, you want to lower everything at the same time. There are some things I miss, but whatever, just to work around. And just to talk about Vectrex, the one tool I love in Vectrex, which I wish was in Illustrator, and maybe it is, I just don't know it, is the scissors. You know, when you draw three shapes on top of one another and you want to get rid of all the overlapping pieces, you could use the melt pieces together tool, whatever that's called, or you can just break out the scissors and just click all the lines you don't want. I love that tool in Vectrex. It's one of my favorite
Fusion,
tools.
Fusion has that too. Like, you can trim. And so, like, I'll sketch in the sketch environment, you sketch a bunch of the different things overlapping, you know, to get lines that cross and stuff like that. And then you with the scissors, you click and you can just drag over all the stuff you don't want and it just disappears as you go. It's awesome.
Yeah, it cuts them away to the next intersection. Wherever it ends, that's a really convenient tool. But the Shape Creator, Dave, is it called the Shape Creator in Illustrator? What is that called?
Shape Builder?
Shape Builder, maybe? Yeah. That's a great tool. Since John Kruphoff showed it to me a couple weeks ago, but you always talked about it, and I've been using it ever since. It's a great, great tool. And it has a really crummy icon. It looks like a ball getting bigger on the side. I never would have talked to John to point that to me.
Because it's very similar. It looks like the blend tool in Illustrator, so yeah. I would always get them confused. Going back to Bob's point of like using shapes to punch out things, I remember watching a video years ago on Illustrator on drawing, and somebody, they didn't just draw the shapes that they wanted, they used a bunch of shapes and would punch out and use subtraction.
That's how I do it all the time.
That blew my mind. I'm like, oh, that is so much easier. I need to do that. It's funny. I've been using Illustrator since 1999, 1998, when I was in college. And I still use all the same tools that were there 20 some years ago. And all these new tools are there, and I just haven't learned to use them yet.
That's so true. And I always use, this is funny, we should do it'd be funny if we did a video tutorial on how to do Illustrator. Like, what we're talking about would be interesting to see it. If I'm going to space out evenly across five things or six things or whatever, if I have to make five sections in something, a lot of times I'll make finger joints on the laser. I'll just draw a random size box, duplicate it five times, and then bring it into the space I need and then stretch it out. All stretch evenly together. Instead of trying to divide that space up, I just make random squares, whatever. As long as they're all the same five squares, I can then bring it inside someplace and then stretch it out, and then it evenly spaces it all. It's like that metal thing that you see people use on their worktop. It's like a metal thing that stretches and all the points stay the same.
Yeah.
It's a divider. It's like a multi-divider, not just two. It's maybe 7 or 8 in a row, and you pull it across and it divides the space. I use that concept in Illustrator with just making several boxes.
A hot tip, and maybe you know it, maybe you don't, in Illustrator is if you draw a box and it's the size that you want, but you need to distribute it and you need to move this box over the same amount every time, if you just hit return, it's this move dialog box comes up and you can say move that 1.5 inches and then you hit okay. But you need to do it again. Command D just duplicates your last move and you can keep doing that to get that that spacing.
Oh,
that's interesting. Very cool. Hmm.
Okay.
Nice.
The hard thing for me is that I use Illustrator once every 6 months. And so these are great things that I won't remember.
That's the thing. I don't use Fusion enough to remember everything.
And, yeah.
I've gone through your course twice just because of that. And I need that refresher. Yeah. I don't have any new tools in the shop, but I have been experimenting the last few days with the Fusion forms, T-splines. Is that am I using the right terminology? Yeah. Where you basically, I've never used this part of Fusion, but you basically start with a blob and you push and pull on various parts of it. And it all kind of interacts with the different segments of the blob. And so curves are nice and smooth. I saw this thing online of this art piece somebody made. And it's this big circular piece. And it's basically like little wood slots sticking out that radiate all the way around this piece, almost like of a clock. And there was a piece of wood sticking out at every second, you know, radiates around. But then there's a shape around that. And I thought it would be a great exercise if I learned how to draw that. And so I went in and I started drawing with these blobs and pulling and pushing and get this freeform shape that I wanted, and then would bring that back into the normal drawing stuff. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know the terms. But then I use another pattern tool to cut out what I wanted, and I got it, and it was really cool. And then I just got hooked on making sculptural things out of the freeform T-splines tools, and I've been experimenting with that.
Yeah.
And it's completely new to me.
Yeah, that is a tough area of Fusion that I've only used. I used it one when I made actually this helmet that's right behind me, that Stormtrooper helmet. I made all of that in that environment. And so it was like starting with a sphere and then just pulling it out and segmenting each area into smaller adjustable segments and then creating those things. And then you create another blob that sticks on top of it and you combine those blobs. It is probably the least efficient way to do something like that, but it was learning a new tool, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think people who do that kind of work will often do it faster, more effectively in Blender or ZBrush or something like that. It's a 3D model sculpturing, 3D modeling sculpture tool more than it is, than the Fusion is, you know what I mean? But capabilities there on both of them. Speaking of Fusion, go ahead.
If you drew that up in Blender, which is, I believe, free, correct?
Mm-hmm, it is.
If you drew up these 3D shapes in Blender, can that be used for CNCing and 3D printing? Can you output the file for that?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you can output a mesh, you know, like an STL file or an OBJ or something like that, which you could bring into Fusion and then do things on top of or modify from there. You could send it straight to other software to cut out or print or whatever. Yeah, for sure.
Is Fusion still free?
There is a personal license that you can get. That's what we show in the course that is free. And the limitation there is on, you know, how much money you make with it every year.
Okay.
But yeah, there is a way to use it for free, for sure. I was working on the course yesterday, recording a couple more chapters, and I got to, this is the connection of all the things we've talked about today. I got to the cam part in Fusion where you set up the cut paths and stuff for doing a CNC work directly from Fusion. And so you can skip, you know, all the other pieces of software, Vectric and, you know, the Carbide Create and all those. You can skip those and do it all in Fusion if you want to go that route. Some people do it all there, some people don't. I don't really use a CNC very often, so I haven't gone through this process since the last time I did the course. And it was fresh on my mind then, but this time I had to like go through and kind of reteach myself that process. And it's changed a lot in 5 years. And so yesterday was really a little bit frustrating in that, like, I used to know this and I'm trying to teach this. And so I went back through it. I rebuilt my old example and updated it and everything. But then even once I'd been through it once, trying to then go through it and explain it again, it was like, I don't know, it's just not present in my mind because it's not something I do very often. That's how teaching is a lot of times. You teach things that you just learned. I mean, I'm not, you know,
claiming that's the best way to learn.
Yeah. But it was a little bit frustrating to be like, man, this stuff changes all the time in Fusion, and it's changed a lot over the last several years, and I was having to relearn it and reteach it within minutes of each other. It was a little weird.
I find the toolpath functionality in Fusion to be very confusing and very hard to learn because there's so many options. And so what I will do is I'll draw something up in Fusion and then I'll just bring it over to Vectric, which is more of a user-friendly kind of interface with that stuff. But it doesn't have nearly the amount of toolpathing options as Fusion. But I just, what happens is I'll and this is usually more of like a 3D shape instead of just a profile. But what will happen is some number will be off in Fusion and my CNC will say it's out of bounds. You're moving the tool out of bounds.
Because Fusion is everything to everybody.
Yeah. And I don't know where I'm at. I don't know what setting it's very confusing to me.
Yeah. Fusion has to be everything to everybody. That's why it's got such a wide variety of parameters.
And I think there is a way to make it simpler for you. If you get your machine library set up so that it has your machine specifically with all those boundaries correct, if you have your tool library built with your tools specifically, those things are going to match a lot more correctly. And then once you have those things set up, doing simple operations there can be really simple. But that initial setup, and that's one of the, what I was going through yesterday with like having to reteach this, is like remembering the setup and remembering getting to the work, you know, it's, and that stuff you really only have to do once, but it's still a work. It's the same area in Fusion is what you would use if you wanted to 3D print something from Fusion directly, not export the file like I do to a normal slicing software. But if you wanted to print from Fusion, you can do that. But man, like, it's like, I need to go into the bathroom, which is right there. So I'm going to go down the street. I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to go to the thing. And then I'm going to end up back here at the bathroom because that same process is what we have to use for CNC and for plasma. And, you know, it's like a manufacturing environment. Like you said, Jimmy, is everything for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's the same environment to print something as it is to laser, to CNC, to plasma. And so it's an overkill process for me. Now, for people who do it at an industrial scale, who use like crazy SLS printers where you can print a three-dimensional volume of 100 pieces, maybe it makes sense. But that whole process is a good thing to understand. But practically, I never print things directly from Fusion. And I would rarely even CNC things through that same interface.
NYCNC, I'm trying to think of John's company's name. John Saunders at NYCNC is really good at teaching Fusion for CAM for CNC. Mm-hmm. He's got tons and tons of videos. But I actually took his course, but I haven't practiced enough to really get back in there.
And I think it's just like, Illustrator is the same way. If you use it all the time or use it on a regular basis, you're going to remember that stuff. It'll come up when you need it and stuff. But, I don't use Illustrator. So I run out of all those tips, all the tools that
I'm
you all told me,
Bob, except for
the
ones I wrote Illustrator down. More.
Well, it's like, I don't use it enough for that stuff to be really, you know.
Are you using Illustrator for graphics? Finger. What are you using to create your graphics?
Forby does all of the graphics stuff if I'm laying out a project or something, I will do it in Illustrator if it makes sense. But oftentimes I can do a 2D drawing in Fusion faster because I just know those tools better, and then I'll export a SVG or something. And But I think any of those things, if you use them on a regular basis, they start to make sense, and naturally, you know, you can go back and use them again. If you don't use them, it's going to be harder to come back to. So anyway, you guys got anything else on this, on software, learning new stuff?
No, I mean, my advice always is just jump in and experiment. Don't worry about breaking anything, because you can't.
Oh, yes, you can. not software, but yeah.
Impression machine.
I like your idea of like the pile of stuff, and then you just kind of dig into it a little bit at a time. I think that's a good way to go about software, hardware, any of it. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters because they're awesome. Mm-hmm. Big thanks to everybody over there that supports the show, that mm-hmm. makes it possible for us to do this. We are very legitimately grateful to you, mm-hmm. Especially our top supporters. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leathergoods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Manegin, Crabtree Creative, OMG Made, and A Pretty Big Deal. They're awesome. But also, people like... I saw a really good name in our Patreon list, and I want to find it. It had Laser in the name. Where did it go? It was Laser Sharks? Laser Shark? I think it... Laser Shark. Rudy. I cannot pronounce your last name, Rudy. I'm sorry. But Rudy goes by Laser Shark on Patreon, and I think that's awesome. So big thanks to Laser Shark for making the show possible. If you want to get the after show, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/makingit. Help us out at any level, and you will get the after show, which is more audio or video, depending on which one you want, after this show, where we talk about other stuff.
There are now hundreds of people with Baby Shark stuck in their head.
Laser Shark Sharks.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway. Cool. So thank you all for that. You guys got anything to recommend this week?
I'm just looking through my list, and I see most of his shorts. I don't really watch any of the long form stuff, but every time I see a short, I'm just so impressed with Titans of CNC Machining.
Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable. So if you haven't looked up or haven't seen, every one of their shorts is viral. Titans of CNC Machining, they have an endless amount of CNC techniques, technology. They jump into any type of machining. It is insane. And I think they're in Vegas, and they CNC everything. All aerospace parts, but they experiment a lot. And they show cool techniques. So did you happen to see the technique where they CNC a whole part, and then the last pass, it's a full 3D five-axis part, and the last pass, the part's just dangling on a paper-thin piece of aluminum. The last pass goes, and then the piece just falls, and it's just dangling on a spring. And then they go in and just pry it off and then clean up the flash.
Mm. Awesome. Yeah. Scott, David.
So the video that I mentioned earlier called I Switched to Logic Pro Because I Hate Myself. It's just a fun video to watch of somebody trying software that they're not familiar with. And then the other one is... Unfortunately, these aren't maker type videos, but they're two videos I enjoyed this past week. The other one is a Brian Eno interview that Apple Music put out a few days ago. It's called Inside Brian Eno Studio. And it's his art studio where he makes these light sculptures and where he records music. And it's just a really cool, kind of laid back, low energy interview.
Cool. Mine is a video that I'm just excited about. Our friend, Anne of All Trades, is pregnant.
Yes.
And she made a very nice video about that process. She said they've had a long process with having a family. And she's like 7 months pregnant, and she's just excited. And I'm really happy for she and Adam. So, yeah, go check that out. She's awesome. He's awesome. They're both awesome.
Congratulations, Anne and Adam.
Great. Cool. I saw while we were recording, two people have just posted videos about the new Bamboo Labs printer that they just announced.
Well, they have
this. And I don't know anything about it, but it says dual extruder and laser cutter. What? So we need to hurry up and finish so I can watch these. Anyway, cool. You guys got anything else for today?
That's it.
That's it.
No show next week. I'll be traveling, But we'll catch you in the week after that. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye. Love you. Have fun on your travels.
You too.